Welcome back to the Adversity Connection. I'm your host, Dan Deegan, and we're broadcasting from beautiful Knowlton, Quebec on 99.1 CIDI. Today, we've got a very special guest, Dennis Merritt Jones. Throughout his lifetime, Dennis Merritt Jones has been on a quest to inspire and lift people to a higher expression of life. His personal vision is to guide people to their purpose, knowing when a person fully awakens to who they are and why they're on the planet, they begin to naturally share their gift with humankind and, in the process, create an enriching life for themselves and the world around them. Dennis, thank you so much for being here. We're really looking forward to talking about your new book, The Art of Uncertainty, how to live in the mystery of life and love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It's a pleasure to share this time with you, and I'm honored to be asked to discuss these things with you. Well, so let her rip.
Oh, well, thank you. We're honored to have you. I don't even know where to start. I mean, what an amazing book. You go through so many insightful ways we can really connect with our internal self. One in particular is fear. You ask an amazing question where you say, what would you attempt to do in the future if you could not fail? What does that question mean to you, Dennis? I mean, why does failure scare us so much?
Failure implies loss. All fear, underline, italic, you know, bold, all fear is attached to a concern of loss of something. And when we are projecting fear into our lives, when we fear has an amazing talent of running out in front of us and conjuring up all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't move forward with our life, why we should live conservatively rather than openly and expressively and coming to the edge, because we're concerned of loss of something, whether it's a loss of a life, a loved one, a job, a career, a home, a lifestyle, a reputation. It always comes down to fear, and fear constricts. It chokes life off. So it's counterproductive to living a life of wholeness, living a life that is fully expressed. So getting in touch with fear, understanding where it lives in our lives, is a crucial element to living a life of a life worth living. So the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, what role does fear play in whatever is the issue going on in my life right now, rather than deny that it's there?
I mean, that brings us to another very interesting question is, why do we see things as we are instead of a lot of the times as they actually are?
Because we can only project what we see in life as a projection of our own consciousness. And we tend to project our own thoughts and deepest beliefs out into the world on this movie screen of life, if you will. And so we can't help but see some aspect of how we are or who we are show up in our experiences, because we're bringing who we are with us, and it has to show up in our world around us and how we live.
Okay. You suggest in a section of your book that a rut is like a grave with no end. And you say, well, there's a certain amount of comfort by staying in this rut. Can you really share what that means and how we can get out of this rut when we really find ourselves in one?
Sure. Well, a rut is, you think about it, a rut is a very safe place, because you're down below the ground, the firing line of life, you know, and it's easy to live in a rut because it doesn't require any exposure. We don't get, essentially, you know, goes back to fear. Fear keeps us in the rut, and when we live in a rut long enough, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and it really becomes a grave for us. We die emotionally, spiritually, physically, eventually. So getting out of the rut, it means coming to the edge of stepping up above the line of fire and into the field of life where all creation takes place. You can't create anything new in your life from within the field of what you already know. And a lot of people stay in that rut called the known because it's comfortable. and yet they want something more in their lives. And the only way they're going to create something new or something additional or more expansive in their life is to get out of the box of the known and step into the unknown. It's absolutely impossible to create anything new from within the rut, from within the box that we're already standing in. The only way to create something new is to step into the unknown, whereas the field of all potentiality for all creation exists, waiting for us to give form to it.
Now, is that what you declare as the edge of uncertainty?
Sure, absolutely. And people resist living in uncertainty. That's the whole premise of the book, is people resist living in uncertainty because they fear uncertainty. And my proposal is that we can learn to love uncertainty with the right perspective, because that's where new life happens. That's where new life is created.
Does this come back to a little bit of our perception of that quote-unquote word failure, where, you know, we're afraid to maybe come to the edge of uncertainty and we're afraid to change things in our life because we're afraid of failing?
Sure. But you have to understand the larger reality is there's no such thing as failure. And I know I say that in the book in a way that people, when they first read it, they think I'm being pithy or snide, but it's absolutely true. The universe is not programmed for the failure of anything. Failure is a label that we put on certain experiences because we've labeled it as not a success. But if you understand how the universe operates, everything is programmed to succeed. And the reality is, even when we fail at something, we're actually succeeding at failing because the universe sees everything as an affirmative. It's always saying yes. It's the only word the universe knows. Yes, 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 yes. It's always affirming our deepest beliefs. And if our belief is that we're going to fail, then the universe is saying, yes, let me help you prove that you're such a success in your life that the only way you can prove that you're success is by failing. But we're really succeeding at failing. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Now, when we succeed at failing, is failure more of a the word I'm kind of thinking of is more of a reality check, but more of a maybe a guiding light to say, okay, you know what, that didn't quite work out that way. That means my goal, my big vision, wasn't meant to be accomplished that way. We're going to have to look at a different way.
Sure, that's taking a proactive stance with any failure in our lives means that we step back and we realize that it's just another way that didn't work for us. That doesn't mean that there's an infinite field of possibilities and potential to come up with new ideas, new perspectives, to reinvent yourself essentially, which means that you're going to reinvent how you see the world.
And this person, I mean, we've heard many people say perspective is everything, and change your story and, you know, what you've been through will change. When we get back from the break, we'd really love to sit down and discuss perspective and also discuss why it's so hard for us to change.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Very good.
You're listening to the Adversity Connection on 99.1 CIDI, broadcasting from Knowlton, Quebec. Well, welcome back, everybody. And as you know, we've got Dennis Merritt Jones here today. And Dennis, we're talking about your book, The Art of Uncertainty. Just before the break, we dipped into fear because really, Dennis, when we were discussing it, I didn't want to get into this big section because this would have taken a little bit more time and I wanted to get that station break out of the way. But fear. I mean, fear is all about perspective and how you see it. If you change the way you look at something, typically that thing you look at changes, correct?
Yeah, of course. What you have to understand is there's nothing wrong with fear. You know, we have to, get it that fear is a natural part of life. We're hardwired to fear. And the question is, will we react to it or respond to it? And it's when we react to it rather than respond to it that it overwhelms us and we become immobilized. And that's where the experience of what appears to be failure shows up. But if we can take a proactive stance with fear, which means, yeah, I think last time we chatted, we talked about the acronym for fear, you know, which most people think the acronym for fear is false evidence appearing real. There's another acronym for fear, which is forget everything and run, which is exactly what people do when fear pops up in front of them. They turn and run the opposite direction. And you can run, but you can't hide from fear because it's not out there. Fear is something that arises from within us. It can be stimulated by something outside of ourselves, but it rises from within us from being stimulated by what's going on out there. And when it arises from within us, we have two options. We can either shut down, panic, and run from it, or we can stand toe-to-toe with it and see it as a teacher and allow it to tell us, to show us, what it is we need to overcome in order to move past it.
Now, when fear comes from inside us, I wanted to talk about confronting habits. Is running from fear, would you consider that some of us have made a habit of not facing fear and just running from it?
Sure. Sure. Habit is just energy looking for the pathway of least resistance. That's why so many people have strong habits. Not all habits are bad, but we have strong habits because it's easier to go with the energy of what wants to take the course of least resistance because there's less effort involved in it. So there is a connection between running from fear and the habit energy that allows us to do it.
Do you think that there's something that's just embedded in us that, I mean, I'm almost thinking it might be a lazy bone, if you will, in us, where we're very difficult to change our habits. You suggest in your book that there's two reasons we shift our habits, and one is inspiration and one is desperation. Why is that?
Well, most people don't confront the areas in their life that are limiting them or restricting their sense of enjoyment unless it gets they become desperate. Inspiration, desperation. Most people move forward in their life facing changes because it's less painful to move through the changes than it is to stay where we are. Desperation or inspiration is what pulls us up and out of that rut you were talking about. We can either be inspired to get out of the rut because we know there's something more for us, calling us, something for us to be or do in our lives, or we can wait until the rut is on fire and we're desperate and pushed out of the rut because it's less uncomfortable out of the rut than it is to stay in it. So we're always growing one of two ways. Either we're inspired because we're called by the possibilities, or we're moving from desperation and we're pushed by pain rather than being pulled by the possibilities. The choice is ours, but you have to be conscious and proactive to live from inspiration.
Well, let's talk living from inspiration. I've heard many people discuss the difference between inspiration and motivation. And I think it's very important that if you could please share the difference between the two, because one is more internally driven, where one, you feel like something's just got a hold of you. Is that correct?
Precisely. We show up on the planet with a purpose. Every person on this planet has a purpose for being here, or they wouldn't be there. It's really that simple. And inspiration comes from dialing into that sense of purpose and finding a way to bring it forward in your life and to bring it to the planet, where motivation really becomes the way that we do it, being activated with specific tools and the power and the passion. But inspiration comes from a sense of purpose for being.
So if something inspires us, it's almost as if the inspiration then becomes a part of the motivation. Is that correct?
Absolutely. If you're deeply inspired to do something or to create or to express something, the universe conspires to support you in that And one of the ways that it does is that it will imbue you with passion and energy and focus. That's why a lot of times when we're really inspired by something and we dive into doing it, we lose track of time and space and everything because we're so involved in the co-creation with the universe of something bigger than ourselves. That's what all purpose is about, is living in the sense that we are part of something larger than ourselves and we're contributing something to it.
Does this like stream right in line with the difference between committed and interested? Like if something inspires us, will it will be more of a committed feeling and more of a committed stance to attaining our goal or completing that project, whatever that vision, aspiration, dream is.
Sure.
As opposed to motivation would be more of a maybe I'm interested for the time being.
Yeah, well, motivation can wane. It can rise and fall. Commitment is the difference between commitment and just being interested is that in commitment, there's no point of return. Being interested, it kind of weighs, it comes and goes. But when we're committed to doing something, and this is where a lot of people, they have their breakdown, is that they really, really don't understand the process of commitment. And so they continue to set themselves up for failure because they're, at some level, they're hardwired to fail, which is really succeeding at failing, because the commitment required to change the direction is simply not within the realm of what they think they're capable of, and that's incorrect, because anybody can be capable of commitment. The question is, what do you want to be committed to? A lot of people are committed to staying in a box. A lot of people are committed to living a small life. A lot of people are committed to a life of inactivity, a life that manifests in the world as unfulfilling.
What is the process of commitment?
You have to have a vision for where you want to go, and perhaps even more fully, why you want to go there. When you're really clear on where you want to go and why you want to go there, and you allow yourself to really, really feel the energetic pull of that, nothing will stop you. Ask anybody who's overcome serious odds or challenges in their lives. They didn't do it because they were interested in doing it. They did it because they were committed to doing it, like as if your next breath depended on it.
It's a completely different feeling than I think I'm going to try this.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you know what? The truth is, Dan, anyone can enter a commitment with themselves if they really want to do it. Just a brief example, imagine that there was a stack of gold bullion bars stacked in front of you, $100 million worth of gold. And the agreement was that you had to change your behavior for 30 days, maybe it's smoking or losing weight or whatever it might be, for a period of time, would you do it? Would you quit smoking? Would you lose the weight for $100 million of gold? Probably you would.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you would. And yet, isn't your life worth more than any amount of money that you can put on it?
Yes, absolutely.
And most people don't put that much value in who they are. That's unfortunate.
It is extremely unfortunate. You're listening to the Adversity Connection on 99.1 CIDI, broadcasting from beautiful Knowlton, Quebec. Well, just before the break, we got into some pretty deep stuff, Dennis. We talked about commitment and just being interested. When you make a commitment and you make that decision, and that decision that establishes a definite commitment, does it mark the beginning of a shift in consciousness?
How can it not? Let's define consciousness real quick, because
Okay. At
the end of the day, consciousness is where it's at. Consciousness prevails. Okay. Consciousness is nothing more or less than the sum total of every belief you've ever had about yourself or thought to be true, even if it was not true, but you embrace it as the truth, and it formed the core of your belief system, your consciousness is nothing more than the core of your beliefs. And so the universe, if you can imagine it, pours itself into the form of your consciousness and demonstrates as such in your life. So consciousness is nothing more or less than a collection of your deepest held beliefs. And that requires, if you want to change your consciousness, you have to be willing to change not just your thinking, but you have to change the beliefs that have created the life that you have. And that's difficult, but it's possible.
When I first started meditating, I started on Dr. Wayne Dyer, who does the Japa-style meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I can't explain to you what the gap is when you totally block out every thought and you just connect with source. He says, because as soon as I start trying to think of what it is, I'm putting thoughts
out
into my head. Yeah.
Right.
But for anyone meditating, and it's been a couple of months now, I'm not, you know, by any means done it for a dozen years or anything, but I still find to this day, it's a very difficult, when I'm done, it's very difficult to say, was I connecting? Was I truly blocking out thoughts? Because I keep thinking, okay, I have to do this. And then you block it out. And then it's almost one of these, oh my God, I think I just blocked it out for a little bit. And then, you know, you're right back in the thought.
Well, part of the practice is that through mindfulness practices, it's about being present in the moment. You know, meditation is really a state of mind that you can, I mean, I meditate throughout the entire day. My life is basically one big long meditation. That doesn't mean I'm sitting on a velvet cushion with my finger over my belly button going om all day long. It means that I take the consciousness of presence into my life. From when I'm standing at the dish at the sink washing the dishes, I really become aware of the fact that I'm washing the dishes. I'm one in the moment with the soap suds. When I'm eating a meal, I'm consciously eating a meal, knowing that I'm really eating energy. You know, I'm eating the sun. When I eat an orange, I'm eating the sun. I'm eating the rain. I'm eating the energy of the farmer who grew the oranges. I'm eating the energy of the money that I use to buy the oranges. Everything comes down to living in the present moment, knowing that everything is connected. That's really what meditation is connecting with the all that is and getting the ego or the sense of self, small s, out of the way.
So our consciousness then, and creates all the beliefs, all the habits, everything we have. What would you suggest to somebody that's trying to change their consciousness about a situation and is having issues just making that shift?
Good question. You have to begin to be so mindful that when certain thoughts or actions pop up, you have to be able to hit the pause button, stop in midstream and ask yourself, what are the beliefs that I hold that are creating me to think or feel or act this way right now? For example, a lot of us go to the refrigerator and we eat stuff and then we hate ourselves afterward for eating it. And if we could be mindful enough, before we put it in our mouth, it's just hit the pause button and ask, you know, why am I doing this? To be so mindful is to challenge the automatic, that's where the habit energy comes in, challenge what the automatic actions are and be thoughtful enough to explore the why underneath the action or the what. But it takes, we have to be able to challenge our beliefs. And our actions are only an effect of our beliefs. But if we can witness our actions in the world and stop them in midstream and ask ourselves, what is the belief that is sustaining this type of behavior? And I'm willing to explore and challenge the belief. I may track it back to a sense that I'm unworthy. I don't feel worthy, or I don't feel I love myself, or there's a number of underlying beliefs that can cause aberrant behavior. The question is, are you willing to stand toe-to-toe with it and challenge them? And most people are not. A lot of them aren't aware of the process we're talking about, but even those who are, they're so addicted to the habit energy of immediate gratification that it's very hard to challenge their beliefs, but it's possible. That's what changes your life.
And I mean, part of me sits here, and as you say that, it makes so much sense. You know, especially when you talk about the what we really, I mean, these little conversations, if you will, these little negative thoughts that keep popping in our head, almost as if we have got to kind of have a conversation with ourselves internally, no?
Yeah, sure. That's where it starts. You have to listen to the voices in your head and challenge them, because very few of the voices in your head are honest or accurate. You know, it's the ego talking to us. The authentic self doesn't say a word, it observes.
And if we continually talk and challenge these inner thoughts, eventually will they change into a more constructive consciousness?
Sure. And the way you do that, Dan, is you replace the thought. It's like kind of like pulling a weed. When you pull a weed from the soil, the smartest thing to do is plant something in that hole that you pulled it from that you want to grow, like a flower. That's the same thing with our thoughts and beliefs. To just get rid of a belief or a thought isn't enough. We have to replace it with another belief that supports what we want to create in our lives.
And if we don't replace it?
Well, if we don't replace it, there are no voids. The universe abhors a vacuum. So your predominant thought tendencies will fill it again.
Dennis, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate all of your insight and just phenomenal information. Go ahead.
Can I give you my website address?
Absolutely. We'd like everyone to know how to get a hold of you.
Thanks.
Your email, website, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you have, please share.
You can get me on Facebook at Dennis Merritt Jones. My website is my name, DennisMerrittJones.com. That's two R's and two T's in Merritt. I do Twitter on a daily basis. I also am a columnist for the Huffington Post. You can catch my posts there. And you can get my books on Amazon or any of the bigger bookstores.
Well, thank you. And just for everybody listening, The Art of Uncertainty is an absolute fabulous book, Dennis. I mean, it really digs deep down, and anyone reading it is going to stop and go, oh, my Lord, that's me. And I mean, we talked about this a little bit on our expert interview that we did about your book. And I'm really hoping that after I read The Art of Being, 101 Ways to Practice Purpose in Your Life, would we be able to get you back to discuss that book, Dennis?
Sure, I'd love to do that. There's lots of interesting material there about giving people a sense of purpose in their lives.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dennis.
My pleasure. It was good talking to you, Dan.
You too. You're listening to The Adversity Connection on 99.1 CIDI, broadcasting from beautiful Knowlton, Quebec. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, enjoy every precious moment. Seize that woo, that window of opportunity that is the present. Joy to you. Have a great week.